All right. We are Invisible Airwaves. This is Chris coming at you from Columbus, Ohio. With me is Alex.
Here I am.
Here you are. Alex, what have you been listening to lately, man?
That's a good question. You said that we were going to talk about this, and I was like, oh, I'll just check my recents on my phone.
Your phone is being
my
used.
My phone. I'm streaming live on Instagram. I can't tell if anybody's watching right now. But anyway, what have I been listening to? The last thing, I listened to some Dream Theater the other
Dream day. Theater, nice. Yeah. All right. That was one of my early gateway bands. How did you like it? What did you find?
I like it. I've listened to them before. I was listening to, what's the album that has Metropolis One on it?
Ooh, I can't remember off the top of my head. But that's a good one.
That's fine, yeah. That's interesting. It's like, I don't even know if I would call that metal at some
point. In some point, yeah. I mean, they're definitely on the side of progressive metal where it's breaking away from metal conventions and the things that are like central to
it. There's a lot of synth for it to be metal.
Well, hey, I've been listening to a lot of synth metal and shit.
Okay, what have you been listening to, synth metal?
No, I'm just joking. But I have been listening to this death doom band called Obliteration.
Death doom?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's, you have crossover genres a lot in metal. And actually this leads into what we wanted to start talking about today.
Okay.
Didn't plan that, but it works. In metal, you have a lot of crossover genres between, like, your central core of black, death, thrash, stuff like that. Death doom is just one that's become popular enough. It's a big enough combination because it evokes enough of, like, the old school death metal feel that you almost call it its own subgenre. It has a very distinct feel to it.
All right. So, like, what's a band that you've listened to?
That's what I was saying, Obliteration.
Obliteration, okay.
They're very cool. They have the old school death metal feel, like Asphyx and Autopsy, bands you've probably not heard of.
No.
They will be thrown at you at some point.
Sure, I'm sure.
Because that's classic death metal from like the late 80s and early 90s and stuff, where it just has a little bit of doom mixed in with those crazy fast death metal riffs. So you get a ton of variation in the tempo and the speeds.
Okay. Yeah, I actually might be interested in that, the way that
I think
you're describing
you would be.
It.
And I showed you Death the one time, right? And you were okay with those vocals.
The shirt you always wear. And Fantano always wears a Death shirt in his videos.
You know, that's one thing I like about him. He's willing to rep the metal stuff.
Shout out Anthony Fantano. He's not going to watch this.
You're watching, bro? Are you out there?
Melon, where are you at?
Come at me, bro.
All right.
So it's a really fun genre, and I guess that was one of the things we wanted to talk about today, starting from an obscure genre where you could even call some of the music cavernous death metal, which it kind of is what defines that death doom sound for some newer bands with just a little more reverb on the vocals.
Yeah, see, I've never heard of that.
Exactly.
Like, genre. Genres.
Yes.
Basically, is one of the things.
Yes, we wanted to talk about genres because whenever you bring up some of these, like, subgenres and then like micro genres, there are so many memes that come out of it from people, right? Who they start talking about like, oh yeah, I only listen to Norwegian blackened progressive tech core, you know. And I'm sure you've come across those kind of comments before.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I mean, okay, so do you subscribe to Listen to This on Reddit?
I don't subscribe to it, but I come across it.
It's basically like our music but for like less known things. Some of the subgenres that they come up with on there, like, they're made up.
Some of them are ridiculous, and I think that that's kind of that's where a lot of people get a bad impression of metal, is they feel like that's what it does.
There are a lot of, like, really specific micro genres. Is that what you
said?
That's
kind of a word.
That's a crazy, I've never heard that, but that's a good description.
Like, here's the justification for it, or here's, like, the skinny on that. You get a lot of slight variations and borrowing from a lot of different core subgenres. So you could say a band like Enslaved, you would call them progressive black metal. Black metal is still the core of their genre. That's what they are.
Okay.
But the progressive is just like a modifier to that, that you could put in front of any genre, you know?
Sure.
So it's like, it's the kind of thing, kind of how we were talking about with Vector last week, how I said technical rather than progressive.
Sure.
It's just to give that slight differentiation and say, yeah, it's still thrash, but it's got this particular element in there that kind of they do a little differently than other bands, or they do it, but other bands don't so much.
Sure. So I guess the question is, how big does one of those specific things have to be before it's considered its own genre? Now, let me frame
it. That's a good question.
Let me frame it in a specific way. When did metal become... Well...
When did metal break from
rock? Well,
because
I was going to say, you, I'm sure, and most metal fans would consider metal to be its own genre.
Yes.
A lot of people, though, that aren't as into metal...
They call it rock.
They would say it's a subgenre of, like, faster, more aggressive, yeah, and, like, you know, an extension on rock. So when does when did metal become its own distinct thing? Because, I mean, Black Sabbath is a lot...
That's the
starting point
the
for a lot of people. Black Sabbath is still probably a classic rock,
yes,
band.
Oh,
even
for some people, yeah.
Well, dude, okay. Yeah, there's the debate. So, I think they're both. I mean...
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I think that they're the first band to have a clear break with, like, Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath, the, you know, song, title, and album.
Okay, okay.
The very first thing they come out with.
Sure.
That's just totally contrary to any music that was being made at the time in a lot of ways, as far as that riff goes.
I agree with you to an extent. I mean, you can't...
It's still guitar
it's,
and
I was
going
to say, it's hard to
vocals.
Say that anything is totally contrary, because it's building on things that other bands were experimenting with. I mean, they were unique for
right.
sure. But, like, you know, we played Helter Skelter by the Beatles or whatever.
Yeah.
A few years before they came out, they're doing really heavy, loud stuff. So, yeah.
Right. And you get Deep Purple, too, who's like, yeah, a proto-metal band.
In there, too.
And they do
around
kind of,
a similar time.
Yes. But Black Sabbath did it so distinctly,
sure,
in such a unique way that I feel that broke away from being 100% rock.
Okay.
Enough to say, yeah, you know, these guys are really doing something that's outside of the scope of what we were calling this.
I agree with you. But I still think there's a lot of crossover between.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
many people are still like, you know, we got a little bit of Sabbath, but we've also got a little bit of, you know, Rolling Stones or
for
you
sure,
know, something.
For sure.
So,
well, and you get that with every genre, though.
Sure,
right?
Crossover.
Like, rap often has pop choruses, mm-hmm, and things that are definitely borrowed
or
from
jazz,
like,
and R&B.
Yeah, absolutely.
A big thing with Kendrick Lamar.
Well,
I don't know how much you've listened to him, but he has a huge jazz and rhythm and blues influences in his beats and samples and things.
Well, and you get that with rock and metal also.
Oh, yeah.
Metal and jazz, like, there are a lot of Atheists. They're a really proggy death metal band that uses a lot of jazz kind of stuff.
I like that name, Atheist.
Right? Just very straightforward. They have the cringiest merch ever, though.
Mm-hmm.
They have this shirt, and on the back of it, it says, it has the start of the Pledge of Allegiance, and it says, like, One Nation Under God, and then it goes, We disagree. So it's
that's
like,
a good one.
All right, it's cool, man, but do you have to disagree that, like, that strongly?
Yeah, that's a little bit, like,
it's a
know,
lot
cringy, tips fedora atheism.
Agreed, agreed. Mm. But, I mean, they're a killer band, so it's okay. But yeah, so with genres, I feel that metal gets a bad rap for that, mm-hmm, in some extent, but
it's one of the more ones prone to elitism, to use the word for the first time that we kind of,
yes,
brought up
the other thing we were
for the subject
talk about.
Elitism and genre elitism is a big, I made some notes on what types of different elitism that came to mind.
There are a few.
Genre was a big one. Another thing that came to mind about, like, forming a genre, you know, or did you have another point about that before I moved on? I'm sorry.
On elitism specifically.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that the word gets misused a ton.
Okay. Elaborate.
So if you think about just the core of what an elitist is outside of the scope of music, just in general, it's someone who thinks that something is better than something else to some extent, right? This thing is elite, therefore we favor it. That's not really what people are doing in metal when they say this particular thing isn't metal. It's not a measure of quality.
It's pedantry.
In a sense, yeah.
More than it is elitism.
It's, right. It's just saying, I just define these things differently. I have a clear definition for what metal is, and this just kind of falls outside of that scope, even if it's related.
I agree. But I think that comes with, a lot of times, and it's not always, but it comes with a dose of the elitism, like, this isn't good enough to be.
That sometimes,
you know what I mean,
happens. There are definitely people who take it to be that way.
Or I guess you could almost argue this variation on the genre makes it not good enough. Not that, because it's too far out. It's just, I don't like what you did with,
mm-hmm,
the metal kind of framework, and therefore I'm going to cast it out. And I'm not thinking of anybody in particular that has been applied to, but I would say that's something that's probably happened to somebody that kind of wants to be like a subgenre of metal.
And I think
people new metal people kind of cast that out.
I would not call it metal.
I don't know enough about it. But it has metal in the name. It's not a subgenre. I know you said metalcore isn't metal either.
With nu metal specifically, it was created effectively by record companies, and they created that label of nu metal. If you watch interviews with like Korn, they're kind of the poster child of nu metal.
Mm-hmm.
They themselves did not really feel that they were playing metal. They felt they were playing heavy music for sure. But calling it metal is...
They weren't setting out to create something called metal. They were just playing a hard rock version that was unique to them.
With some hip-hop influences.
Okay.
And, yeah, I feel like that's it totally came from that hard rock kind of vibe.
Okay.
Like, even you could say similar to, like, later Metallica in the 90s and the kind of stuff that they made on, like the Black
Album.
Like, the
sellout period, kind of, so to speak, when a lot of the metalheads lost interest and a lot of normie radio rock guys caught on Inner Sandman.
Yeah, and I feel that...
That's a pretty good song.
Oh, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's a good song. It's not my favorite Metallica song.
It's better than a lot of their radio songs, though.
True.
I think. Like, I agree. Dude, I heard One the other day.
Do you not like that song?
I used to, but I heard it on the radio the other day, and it didn't hold up. It was a little cringy for me in parts.
That's
really
interesting.
I don't know. James Hetfield doesn't always... what's the other one? Unforgiven? I don't care for that one.
I don't care for that one either, but that's also Black Album.
No, it is.
I will take anything pre-Black Album to just about anything post-Black Album.
Okay.
And I bet I'd get a lot of flack for that.
Really?
From
I mean, I feel like... Well, you wouldn't get flack from metal... heads from for
not
that,
from
that's a
metal
very
heads,
popular opinion
but
would,
they're
would
from
think.
Like your average Metallica fan. The thing is, like, Metallica is almost their own like weird community that they have going on. Super strong opinions. So with back to the elitism thing, I definitely agree that there's a dose of that in some circles, what you were talking about with this thing, this particular movement isn't good enough to be part of our genre.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it often gets mischaracterized as being something like that when that's not the point being made. And part of that, maybe people can articulate their points better and that'll help.
Sure.
But I think most of the time, like you also mentioned, metalcore, the justification for that is just the fact that metalcore was born out of hardcore, which is literally hardcore punk. And punk and metal are both heavy music, but you call them separate genres.
Yeah, they're distinct.
They're very distinct from each other. So even though metalcore has the influences and some bands definitely sound more metal than others, I just wouldn't call it metal, even though I do love a lot of metalcore bands.
Yeah, I guess that's just the big question is at what point, how much percentage of metal influence, you know, does a band have to have before they...
So
gain the metal label. You know what I mean?
I think if
I start a band that's, you know, 50% inspired by straight up Black Sabbath metal and 50% inspired by, I don't know, like Paul McCartney's pop sound. I don't know. That's an extreme example.
It is.
But at what point, you know, are you going to call me a metal band if I have 50% metal influence, if I have 75% metal influence with maybe a few, like 25% pop little, you know, bridges thrown in there? I don't know.
There are a lot of, it's the kind of thing where you almost want to say, I don't have a direct answer for that.
You know it when you hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a distinct sound to something that's metal that just permeates through it.
Mm-hmm.
Through Black Sabbath, even to black metal bands and death metal bands. There's just a certain like chromaticism about it and jaggedness to it that is distinctly like metal. And even with Iron Maiden and heavy metal versus black metal, you can see those crossing over. I think that in some sense, it partially comes from where your circles come from as you're like coming up as a band, the kind of bands that you play with and the kind of bands that are directly affecting your sound and on whom you're kind of influencing the way that they're going as well. Because I think that it's a both and kind of thing. It's both the sound and to some extent like the image and the kind of the circle that you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Like there has, you have to be able to draw a clear line, I think, back to Black Sabbath ultimately. You
right.
have to say this band was influenced by this band, influenced by so on and so forth.
See,
and it gets to Black Sabbath.
That's why you asked the question, is Black Sabbath metal? Because Black Sabbath was not influenced by Black Sabbath. They are Black Sabbath.
Right. And I mean, obviously, I say yes. But
sure.
No, you're right.
Are the Ramones punk, or were they just one
proto
of the first
punk?
Yeah, are they just, I've heard them referred to as like the godfathers of punk.
I don't know enough about punk.
I'm a big Ramones fan, but I don't know enough about punk to know what like the punk community. I mean,
without pissing off a bunch
sure,
of people.
Obviously, I think they're probably considered to be on the soft side for punk music
right.
in general. They're very poppy. But anyway,
what's the most elitist or unpopular opinion that you hold in music? Because we've been covering mine, and I think that a lot of people would consider me an elitist for a lot of the shit I just said.
I don't know. It's hard to say because. The other day we were talking about guilty pleasure songs at work,
uh-huh.
and I was like, I don't really have any shame.
I'm the same way.
Like,
if I like a song, I just fucking like a song.
We were at Roosters for lunch break yesterday, and Justin Bieber's Sorry, you know, is it too late now to say sorry?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Came on. Yeah, that one. I don't know exactly what that melody. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
doesn't need to
yeah,
do
yeah.
that later in the
yes,
chorus.
Yes, you're right. That's the end of the chorus. Sorry. Out of context. But anyway, yeah, that came on the at Roosters, and we were like, me and another coworker were like singing it, and I was like, this is a good song, man. It's got a good
sure.
It's got a good melody. So I don't know.
I have no problem with that. Like Total Eclipse of the Heart. I think that's just a fantastic vocal performance.
Sure. Mm-hmm. ABBA. I like ABBA.
ABBA. Yeah, for sure.
ABBA's
they've got
awesome.
Some great stuff.
I've been known to listen to some Taylor Swift also.
Oh, okay. Hell yeah.
She's got some good pop songs, man.
Interesting. So you prefer the poppy stuff that she's done?
Yes. Well, some of her country-er stuff. I don't know. Some of that was pretty decent too. But I just mean like her more recent stuff, like on 1989, the one that had "Shake It Off." "Shake It Off's" not a good example of that. But
the song became a meme with the screaming goats.
Oh yeah,
Trouble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did like that song.
Yeah,
before
she
the memes.
She can write some quality pop songs, or at
yeah.
least have a hand. And I don't know how much she writes. Okay.
So what is your most elitist view, Alex?
I don't
the
like
world needs
I don't like
learn.
Beyonce. I don't yeah, there it is. I don't get Beyonce, really.
Okay.
She's got a couple of songs, but I was thinking about this the other day because I saw somebody post on Reddit about, you know, Beyonce, and I looked at her top songs. Her top songs on Google are all like at least 10 years old.
Right.
But like her fan base acts like she's Michael Jackson.
True.
So I don't see it. And I don't think she's not I don't think she has a lack of talent,
uh-huh.
but I just don't think it's on the level that is bestowed upon her. She doesn't
okay.
write. She doesn't have the hits. She doesn't have the songwriting talent. As far as I know, she doesn't really write any of her own songs. They're all like written by like those teams. Of
yeah,
pop, you know
yeah.
what I mean. Like Michael Jackson wrote every song
wrote
on Beat It
songs.
Except for one.
Right.
Almost every song on Thriller he wrote or co-wrote.
So here's what I like about that answer. That was a good answer because it wasn't just that you dislike Beyonce. It's
I,
that
I had
you
a
think,
reason.
Right. It was miss. You think that she is mistakenly worshipped.
For sure.
And that she honestly isn't that good for what she's doing.
Right. Like, she's not. She doesn't stand out to me amongst the pop stars of today. The Katy Perry's, the. And Taylor Swift's to an extent.
Right.
You know, even amongst the ones that are more R&B and hip hop, like, you know, Nicki Minaj or.
Yeah, Nicki
you know,
Minaj legitimately
she's
writes
she's really
some
good.
Interesting
she
songs.
Writes a lot of her. She, as far as I know, she writes most of her own lyrics. She's a really talented rapper. Some of the style of her songs isn't always my tastes.
Kind of related to that, Lil Wayne just dropped like a huge fucking album.
I heard
right?
that he came out. Yeah, the Carter Five. I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't either. I did listen to Mona Lisa, which
did
is
you,
the song
I haven't
everyone's
yet.
Going
the one with
crazy
Kendrick
about.
Lamar. Was it, what did you think? I haven't heard it.
It was interesting.
I want to listen to it.
I used to really hate Lil Wayne when I was in high school and middle school. Do you
I
remember
can,
this
oh,
at all?
Oh, I can imagine that because you were, I mean, you were definitely a metal elitist
I
back
used
then.
To be.
You were
yeah.
like, oh, you were probably like, oh, fuck the Beatles.
See, back then, I had what I think is actually a metal elitist. I think that's what I actually was because I thought metal was better than everything else. I thought that, mm-hmm. like, there was something about Symphony X, like their talent made them inherently better than other bands.
That's exactly one of the points I wanted to touch on, was like right. the technical elitism or like complexity. Or
yeah.
Like, you know, oh, this is really complex, and like I only listen to classical music. You know what I mean? It could go that yeah. far. I only listen to Beethoven, and anything that's, you know, modern music is just garbage. Right. But yeah, to and a lesser extent, I don't listen to technical metal or, you know.
This is something I flipped on within the past, like, 2 years, I think.
Yeah.
Because you remember in high school, yeah, it probably bugged the hell out of you. I thought Kurt Cobain was a shitty songwriter, and
oh,
I not,
man.
Thought Nirvana was
yeah.
awful.
That's such a, like, that is really uninformed.
It
like,
was. It yeah. was. I totally agree. And I 100% flipped on that, actually, when I started, like, looking into metal more.
Mm-hmm.
Versus where I was, which was kind of just getting the surface level stuff. Once I dove into the more elitist bands, like the ones that are held in high regards by the supposed elitists.
I'm glad you said that. They only yeah. have 3 albums. Which ones have you listened to, Nirvana? Have you listened to any of them all the way through?
Yeah. The one with the baby.
Nevermind. You've heard that yeah. one, but have you listened to In Utero?
No.
Not to jump ahead, but I'm definitely going to give you In Utero. I think you would actually point. Really like it. Right. That's their third and last album. I think it's better than Nevermind.
Okay, cool.
But, okay, yeah.
But the more I got into specifically black metal, it's so stripped down and literally just garage bands recording with whatever the fuck recorder they could find.
Mm-hmm.
And playing out of these like almost broken amplifiers and having horrible production.
Oh, yeah.
It made me like understand the Nirvana thing, and
yeah,
the,
I can see how that would
appeal of something that's broken down a little bit.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that would give you a more of an appreciation for grunge,
right?
And
really, I think that I, from getting into like doom metal, I was much more able to get over like simple songs or songs that only have like one riff or something that's repeating over and over again. I'm like perfectly okay with that now, whereas at the time,
oh
that was
yeah,
one
yeah,
that bugged me about
I remember,
Nirvana.
I remember you had like this disdain for anything that repeated.
Yeah, I really did.
I thought it was really interesting because that's the basis of so much music is just a riff. Like you write a riff and that's the basis of the song. I mean,
and
Led Zeppelin songs are like that to an extent. I mean,
part of
not
it
to
was
say that they're
just
simple, but
it was just a general aversion from like pop. Or this structure to popular music.
Uh-huh.
And I fell into, like you said, that technique elitist kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where I felt very strongly that strong musicianship was like the mark of what you wanted to see or get out mm-hmm. of music. And I've definitely softened on that a lot. I still love seeing like really impressive technique, but it's not the only thing I seek. In music.
Yeah, I remember in particular one time we were over at Aaron's and Dan and I were listening. Tom Petty had just come out with an album
yeah.
and Dan was letting me download it onto my laptop from like he had the CD or whatever. And we played the first track and it was just like, the song was basically like a 12 bar blues.
Right.
And it comes on with the just kind of a repeating. And you're like, within like 30 seconds, you're like, oh my God, this song is terrible. Like he hadn't even started singing yet. But just the main riff went through like twice and you're like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And Dan and I were like, God damn it, dude. Like,
what it's funny, we could not have done this podcast in my like late high school days because I just wouldn't listen to things that weren't like metal
basically.
Or classical.
Basically.
It is kind of interesting though, because that's something that comes across in a lot of genres. Like I only learned recently that in the jazz world, technical elitism is like a big thing.
I believe that a lot of that is really specific, like
yeah.
you know. But it's interesting too, because I feel like a lot of jazz is like very improvisational and like
for sure. But like you need to know
freeform jazz,
yeah. Mm. But like you need to know what you're doing and be able to convey that. And if you can't, like certain jazz circles will just be like, "Nah, fuck out."
Yeah, you're redlining a couple of times on that.
Oh,
I don't
good
know
call,
if
good
that's
call.
Good or not.
No, redlining is
well.
Not
I mean, I
great.
Know, but I just meant so
it's fine. It'll just get a little more distorted than it should.
All right. So let me see, what else did I have about different kinds of, we touched on complexity, genres, oh, kind of the hipster attitude of like, I was into this band before they like broke out into the mainstream. You know, yeah. I listened to them before they got popular.
You want to be part of like this special club, right?
Which can blend into the genre sometimes when a band kind of adapts more mainstream sounds into their album that gets big.
Well, it's kind of funny that it comes up a lot in metal where you have people who say, I like their old stuff. I only like their first like three albums. And I don't know. I go back and forth on it because there are some bands where like truly I feel the first few albums they made were like the only good things they did.
Yeah. Sometimes you just can't help it. But yeah. Other times, and I get it too, when a band has a lot of genre, changes between album to album. Arctic Monkeys, right. Every time Arctic Monkeys comes out with an album, about half the people are pissed off because their albums all sound really different.
Right.
And so if you're not into the sound that they were going for, I get it.
And I'm not, I don't have a problem with like experimentation and doing different genres. Like one band I like a lot is Opeth, and I've showed them to you.
Oh yeah,
before.
I know. I like them.
Formerly a really heavy death metal band, and then they started doing like almost jazz rock, like prog rock kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah, pretty proggy.
It's like a really hard shift. But I still like it because it's done well. What I don't like are
exactly.
The bands who like change for the sake of change and
sure.
Do it really poorly.
Sure, just to get popular. But like, okay, the big example, Childish Gambino, came out with two albums that were, you know, rap.
Right.
Both really good. I liked them. Came out with an album that had no rapping on
right.
It at all. And if you're just really big into rap and you didn't care so much for like the R&B and jazz and like soul vibes that he went for on Awaken My Love, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm just lucky enough that I like the rap and the stuff he's doing
so
now.
So you could enjoy it all.
I loved it both. Tame Impala, same thing. That album that Jimmy is obsessed with, Currents, that's Tame Impala's third album. And it's in line with their other stuff, but
right.
It's a lot different. It's a lot more synthesizers instead of like guitar riff based. And so a lot of Tame Impala fans were like, this is too different for me. I love both.
Sure.
So.
But if you're not into a certain genre,
that's not
into
your
it.
Fault. Yeah, that's kind of what I was.
But there are definitely two ways of going about that because it comes up a lot. Bands experiment because, you know, writing over 20 years or whatever, obviously you need to do something different to stay interested.
At that point.
But some people take that and just shit on it for the fact that it's changing rather than just saying a much more subdued kind of phrase about it, like just, you know, I don't care for it. It's not
right.
My thing.
Yeah, you don't have to be pissed off about it.
Let the guy experiment. I can get being like a little bummed that you're not going to get more of what you initially liked.
Yeah, if it's not your thing, but
yeah, there's nothing wrong with that by any means.
Do you think that artists themselves can play into how elitist their fans are if they have an attitude
definitely
about it themselves?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So one thing that comes up in metal a lot is the concept of the false in black metal. It's funny because that's definitely the genre where you see the most like inner circle, outer circle kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, like, you know, there are certain attitudes that people have about music that some people will label as false. Like, it's such a weird thing to explain, but it's basically like saying someone's a poser or they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Okay.
And there are definitely bands that embrace that and kind of feed into it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like say, you know, death to the false and shit like that. Obviously tongue in cheek in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those are fairly rare. But some bands definitely do it.
Yeah. I feel like you get that in rap. With
oh, I
like
could
the,
definitely see
yeah,
that because the
fake,
egos are much
fake
more.
Rapper, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and really, it kind of feeds into the culture of like diss tracks and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
that's kind of dissing each other is just a big part of what makes rap and hip hop culture.
Have you heard these Eminem and MGK?
Of course,
tracks?
I have.
Yeah, the Eminem ones are a lot better, I think, but I might just be biased.
I thought that the last two were very similar, but I do give Eminem a small step up.
I think his lyrics were a lot better.
It's kind
of heard
hard
a lot
for
of people.
It's hard for me to separate the music from the lyrics in choosing, and I much preferred Eminem's song.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just not enough of like a lyrics guy to have looked them out or sought them out, really looked at them, and like thought critically about.
Yeah,
which I thought won.
Okay, yeah. I feel like the Machine Gun Kelly song was basically just like, Eminem, you're old and you know, I used to like you, but now I don't. Like that was, and, but.
Well, yeah, and I liked Eminem's line about that, something about talking smack about him with his dick in his mouth or something like that.
I think the best one was something about, like, had to give you a career just so I could ruin it.
Yeah, that was a good
line.
This
is as big as you're going to get, so enjoy it. Yeah, like, that was good. Sort of thing.
Well, it's kind of funny. Those diss tracks are actually why I've started getting a little more interested in hip hop.
I got albums to recommend for you.
Good, good.
Yeah, you asked about that a few weeks ago.
I had asked about it because I think just the fact that it's such a distinct culture makes me interested. It's kind of something you have with metal. There's this distinct subculture in it. And it's just kind of fun to explore the different characters in that. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious about seeing what the hip hop world is really like.
A great, great rap, hip hop, whatever you want to call it, album that came out this past summer I mentioned to you is Kanye West and Kid Cudi came out with a project under like a name Kids See Ghost. It's okay. The name of their like group and the name of the album. And it's hip hop, but it blends a lot. They take from psychedelic and trap and all sorts of other. That's one I'll probably give you at some point.
Sounds good.
Favorite of mine.
I'm very curious how I'll feel about it because I don't like Kid Cudi or Kanye from what I've heard.
Independently,
of them.
Yeah. Okay.
Now that's not to say I've really
dived
a lot of thought to it.
Yeah, you haven't
but
dove into
just
them,
the songs I've heard
on the surface. Yeah, that might not be one of your favorite ones, but yeah, I'm interested to talk about that too.
Yeah, I am too. That would be interesting.
How long are we at?
We are at 31 minutes and 22 seconds.
So speaking of, you know, whether or not you liked an album, I mean, we can transition into the album talk.
Yeah,
here,
let's just take a
to.
Short break and then we can talk about the album.
All right, cool. Awesome. Thanks for listening. This is Invisible Airwaves. Shout out our Instagram page is at Invisible Airwaves Cast. Go ahead and follow that. We're going to post, you know, when we're doing albums, some fun pictures of, you know, maybe us recording, things like that.
Yeah, or just general adventures and shit.
Once we get enough followers, I'll probably cast or stream it from there. I'm live streaming on my personal account right now just because it has a lot more followers, but.
And we want you all to listen to us and just hang out a little bit, guys.
Yep. So, second half, it's album talk. Today we're going to do Steely Dan, Countdown to Ecstasy. So, Steely Dan is one of my favorite bands. I wanted to definitely give one to Chris. I got some notes here about it. It's their second album, 1973 on ABC Records.
ABC Records. Didn't even know that was ever a thing.
Yep. It was a critical success, but they didn't have really any hits.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
The
most well-known song on there is probably the opening track, Bodhisattva. You'd heard that
one
before.
Yeah, Bodhisattva.
Did you know any of the other songs?
No, that was the only one I'd heard before.
I didn't figure you would have. Recorded it in Colorado and Los Angeles. Their first album had two guys on lead vocals, but the second singer left after the first album, so it's all Donald Fagen, who sang on all the tracks for the rest of the, you know, tenure of the band. Main group members on Steely Dan would be Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, who passed away last year.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know. I saw them, though, before he died, so that's awesome.
That's awesome.
They still had, like, a regular studio band at that time. After the first couple albums, mm-hmm. they just basically had rotating studio musicians, but this is still like the core band.
So I read a little bit on it, and something I had read, kind of what you had talked about last week, the fact that they didn't like playing live.
Right.
This was the first album that they wrote for the purpose of playing live, correct?
Yeah, basically they could do most of it right in the studio live.
Which is interesting to me, because I looked that up after hearing it, and when I heard it just with what they had, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. I can understand why they wouldn't bring that on the
and
road.
And that's the live written one. Yeah, that's it's pretty interesting.
It definitely had like a lot of layers of production going on.
Yeah, so that's basically the gist of it. I don't think anybody's watching on the live cast right now. I've got it on vinyl back there behind me. Running theme on things that, you know, we have we're doing albums that we own on vinyl. It's makes sense though, because we really like these.
Of course.
I have all
Steely
Dan.
You buy the one that you like.
I have all the Steely Dan on vinyl. But nice. Yeah, so what did you think? Give me your initial impressions.
Yeah. A few things. First, I definitely liked it more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I didn't think you'd hate it, but I was curious on how you'd feel.
Right. So I've listened to Steely Dan before here and there. My uncle, shout out Steve.
Steve. Steve's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a great dude. He, when I was first getting into playing guitar, he had recommended Steely Dan for me because he was like, dude, their guitarist is like fucking killer.
They have crazy guitar parts.
Yeah. And whatever songs I had looked up at that time did not convey that. I don't know what it was, but I just listened to songs that didn't do as much. They weren't
some
as busy.
Some have more guitar than others.
And that was one of my biggest takeaways was all of the solos. Mm-hmm. The solos were all excellent, and they added a lot to the songs. They were so purposeful and not just... It wasn't just guitar wank. And I like guitar wank, but in the context of what they were doing, all of the solos felt super deliberate and well-placed, well-timed. It was great.
Yeah, one of the best guitar parts is on the opening track, like I mentioned, Bodhisattva, when they do that call and response between
on the chromatic runs.
Yeah, the and then the horns do it, and then the guitar. And they go back and forth.
I had that written
that.
Down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
great.
So cool.
That's great.
They also, one of the things I loved was how percussive the guitars were in a lot of cases. And it had that classic, like, single coil Stratocaster kind of sound. Mm-hmm. Was it a Strat? Do you know?
You know, depending on the track, it might have been different. I don't know.
Okay. But it
Are you talking Bodhisattva still? Or
just in general.
Oh, okay.
On the
I don't
album.
Know. I'm not sure.
Okay. But specifically on My Old School.
Oh, that's a great song.
What's funny is before the solo, it wasn't one of my favorites on the album.
Okay, but yeah, that does have a good guitar solo.
The solo, though, they get that little like plucking that almost sounds like chicken picking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I can. I know exactly what part you're talking about. That might be. I'm not sure who plays on that one because they did have some other guitar players, but that's probably Jeff Skunk Baxter.
Okay, cool.
Who is now a defense contractor for the government.
Huh.
He said that his experience in the studio and using like different studio techniques and equipment for like
right.
it for different purposes than it was used for before led him into an interest on how terrorists use technology in different and creative ways to exploit.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he has all these security clearances and he works as a defense contractor for the U.S. government.
Good
now.
For him.
But yeah, he
Jesus.
Was the guitar player on for the first few Steely Dan albums.
These are really smart songs too.
These are really smart dudes.
Yeah,
I mean, they were
that's
formed,
what I was going to say.
They were formed in like a college in the Northeast. You
that
know?
Makes sense because the... damn it, Windows, why would you do that to me?
That's okay. Well, it's technical. This is episode 2, folks.
We're getting there. But yeah, the songwriting, it was all so structured, and the layers of the chord progressions and all of the seventh chords,
amazing chords,
slight variations,
amazing vocal, like melodies on top of those chords.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what's some of the ones that I have written down? I mean, on, Your Gold Teeth. You throw out your gold teeth. Do
you see how they? Yeah, I had that one, too.
That's a great song. That's one of the ones I've written down as my favorite.
My favorite, I think, was The Boston Rag. The Boston
Rag. That's a good one.
What I loved about that was how it came in major, very major, with the that melody, the do-do, Nice little voice crack there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Shit, I'm going to edit in the sound of it. Yeah, but anyway.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. That was very, like, major upbeat kind of skipping around.
Yeah.
And then the chords in the verse were just immediately, like, the relative minor.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And in the...
It creates kind of, like, that tension, that sadness.
Yeah,
that's the one thing I love about them. They create that like feeling of like, and a lot of the songs do that in this one. What's the Razor Boy does it really well with the melody on the chorus. Will you still have a song to sing when the Razor Boy comes and
takes your fancy things away? Yeah, it does
a lot. It just creates like a tension, and I just like kind of a nostalgia almost for nostalgia, something that doesn't exist.
Melancholy.
Yes,
it really evokes those emotions. Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
they have amazing melodies and
yeah. And I also one other thing I loved was their use of the full dynamic range. You had a lot of sections where almost every instrument dropped out, and you had like one or two instruments going and doing something kind of subdued. And then it would build and build and build to suddenly this like massive chorus.
That's one of the things about their production is you can hear every instrument. Like, I mean, you want to like hone in on like, listen to the cymbals on that, man.
Right.
And they're clear as day. They're the same. You can hear them just as clearly as if you want to listen to the guitar. You know what I mean?
And on the Boston Rag, that's why it was my favorite song.
Okay.
Because they had that section where the pianos dropped out for a second and it was just doing the dun. Dun,
yes.
Dun, dun, and that slowly building that.
And the guitar just a little drum comes in. And the guitar solo, I think, starts there.
Very small and subdued at first, quiet and just more melodic. And then it slowly builds.
And then they swing back into that major riff from the beginning.
And
they
bring all of the instruments back in.
It's incredible.
And the other thing I loved about that, more to the production side again, too, the amp sounded like that classic broken tube amp sound where they got the fuzz by literally breaking their speaker.
The guitar tone. One of the other songs I had written down is the guitar tone on Showbiz Kids.
Yes. I was going to say that too.
That's the slide guitar on that is Rick Derringer. If you're not familiar, he's interestingly enough, he was in the band, the name's escaping me, but Hang On Sloopy.
Really?
The 50s. Rick Derringer's in that band. And then he also was the guy that did that song, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo.
Song? Yeah, I hate that song.
They play it on like the classic rock stations and stuff. But yeah, Rick Derringer on slide guitar on that. But that's some dirty guitar tone on
it
that
really
one. That's
is
one of my other favorite
filthy
ones on the album.
Mm-hmm. And in contrast to how clean and precise everything else feels, the fact that that guitar comes in so hard and that the distortion is... You can tell that's not a pedal or an effect. That's just a literally
natural
busted speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an incredible thing to hear. I love that. I absolutely love that sound.
For sure. So you said that one was your favorite. Did you write any other particular tracks down? It's like standing out.
I wrote notes on all of them.
Okay, you have notes on everything.
So one other one I did want to point out because I've masturbated enough about this album. Pearl of the Quarter.
I like that one a lot, too. And it's really surprising. Those two are not the ones that I would have picked you would have liked.
I'm not saying I liked
that
one.
Okay. You didn't like that one.
That was my least favorite by far.
Interesting. Why? I'm just curious.
So my first note, We the Eagles Now. That song, the melody there sounds so much like the Eagles to me.
I can hear it, kind of a desperado.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I don't like that aspect because I don't really care for the Eagles.
Sure.
The vocals, and specifically the vowels that they use, something about like the end of the verse. He does the voulez, voulez.
Yeah, the French. Voulez, mm-hmm.
I hated that.
Hmm.
I have no reason.
No rational.
Why. No just, rational. Just every time I heard taste. It, just it almost sounded like he was sitting there like making out with the mic while he was doing it. Like he was really into saying that.
That's really interesting. I like that one for like the story and the lyrics, which I can touch
the
on.
Story the story was interesting. I did. Yeah. I did catch some of the lyrics mm-hmm. on that, and that was cool.
Okay, that's fair.
Actually, I had another lyric line that I. Just
yeah, we can talk
out.
About the lyrics. What is it?
Let's see. I guess only women in cages can stand this kind of night. I guess only women in cages can stand this kind of night.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look up the lyrics, and I don't know the context of that, but it was one that really stood out to me. Just for whatever reason, it caught my attention as an interesting thing to say. And I wanted to see if you know the context on that.
Let me pull them up.
Okay, go for it. Because I feel like that could mean a lot of different things. It could be a political thing. It could be... I don't know. I don't really know what it could be.
So, let me pull them up here. At the top of my head, I feel like that song is kind of just about like a floozy that's getting... you know, somebody is paying for her, like she's got a sugar daddy, because the chorus, will you still have a song to sing when the razor boy comes and takes your fancy things away?
I see.
But let me see. So the full line that you're referencing,
mm-hmm.
I guess only women in cages can stand this kind of night. I guess only women in cages can play down the things they lose. You think no tomorrow will come when they lay down. You can't refuse.
I see.
So I feel like it's probably like a prostitute or a sugar baby of some sort.
I read that prostitution was definitely like a frequent thing they talked about.
Pearl of the Quarter.
Exactly.
The guys, you know, she loves the candy and the flowers that I bought her, you know, and she's on her way. The guy is in love with the prostitute in that one for sure.
That's very interesting. And I've heard that that happens a lot. Like a lot of prostitution is, it's more about like, a guy who hates his wife.
He's lonely.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I wrote down. Like, they have a lot of, and this is a common theme in their lyrics, just loneliness, perversion, drug addiction, mild school, about a drug bust at their college, if you picked up on that.
Yeah,
I
did.
Your daddy was quite surprised to find you with the working girls in the county jail. Pearl of the Quarter. I wrote down both of those songs as examples of that. And I mean, they have other weird songs in their other albums. There's one, Hey 19, about a guy that can't relate to, he's an older guy and he can't relate to the 19-year-old girl he's dating. that's a good one.
Interesting.
There's one about a guy that plays dirty movies in his basement for the local kids in the neighborhood.
Okay. So the interesting thing about those is the question of whether or not it's experience. And because in metal, a lot of the lyrics are way too ridiculous to be plausible.
Yeah, I think they just liked writing weird, quirky, you know what I mean? They have common things that come up, but it's just kind of like they were literary, you know what I mean? These are these are characters.
They
like
just
troubled,
wanted to talk about
troubled people that are
girl
weird.
Of the night.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Things like that. Or I mean, just lonely characters. One of the big songs on Asia, Deacon Blues,
mm-hmm.
about like, just a lonely guy that wants to play saxophone out in bars and drink scotch all night long, and he's just a lonely guy, you know, things like that. So yeah, I think they're more just characters than anything else. But yeah, I mean, that's a good call out. One of the speaking of lyrics,
yeah.
Showbiz Kids, not only the guitar tone, but I don't know if you picked up on any of the lyrics of that. That's kind of a satirical, like tongue-in-cheek jab at like hipster kids that like liked them.
Oh, really?
Particularly, there's the, they got all the booze they need more than money can buy. They got the booze they need more than money can buy. They got their shapely bodies. They got their Steely Dan t-shirt.
Okay.
Which is funny because I'm pretty sure they didn't sell like so if they had t-shirts, they were bootlegs, and so they were kind of ripping on these like these kids with money, these hipster kids. And the best line in that song, which is pretty edgy for 1973.
I did catch this one.
Show business kids making movies of themselves. You know they don't give a fuck about anybody else.
Yeah. I had that written
That's
down.
That's great.
Fuck in my dad rock?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
1973 yacht dad rock. They don't give a fuck about anybody else.
The
I love
FCC
that line.
Was so mad.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a long time
I know,
before.
I'm just joking.
I know. It was a long time before parental advisory stickers or anything like
right.
that. But yeah, that's a great
That
line
definitely
in that
pulled me out. I was like, wait, what? Really? I could not believe that they said that. Because
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't
yeah.
hear that in like a fucking Zeppelin song or whatever.
No, definitely not. I mean, they're very suggestive, but they don't come out and say it.
They don't come out and say it.
Well, Robert Plant, squeeze my lemon till the juice runs down my leg.
And he has an orgasm in like every single song.
Oh, yeah. Whole lot of love. There's like a fucking, there's a cum section.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, the other thing I thought was interesting, and you should seek this out. Your Gold Teeth
yeah.
has a sequel song, Your Gold Teeth 2, on a later album.
Oh.
Not closely related other than they both contain the line, you throw out your gold teeth and see how they roll.
So they just found another story where that line
yeah,
was applicable.
Yeah, I think they just liked that lyric. And so they have a song called Your Gold Teeth 2, which is a great song too. But
that's really funny because I can see like whoever the lyricist of the band was. I could see him like a week after they released the album going,
there's more.
Shit.
Yeah, there's more.
I could have, these lyrics could have been so much fucking better. I have to redo it.
And then the other thing I like about that song is how at the end of that, they go into that, like, they change up the tempo and they do kind of like a jazzy, like,
yes.
funky, like, breakdown.
And those were
ending.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. A lot of the solos, while I do say that several of them were very deliberate and precise, a lot of the other ones were also very jammy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They
the
like
the keyboard solo
yeah,
on Your Gold Teeth is very loose. That's Donald Fagen, the lead singer.
Okay.
And, like, you know, they obviously had a lot of studio people come in and play keys on other songs, but that's him, and it's a really interesting, like, funky, loose,
yeah,
bluesy.
Yeah, definitely was.
I think that's a Wurlitzer electric piano on
okay.
that one.
Good on you for the brand of the piano that they used. That's, I'm impressed. Good one.
Thanks.
Yeah, so that was very interesting. I went to a jazz fest recently. Have you ever been to like the...
We've been to Jazz and Ribs together.
Jazz and Ribs, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't go to that this year.
I haven't been in a couple of years since we were there after the run that time.
They had one in over in Gahanna, too.
Okay.
And
yeah,
that was
Creekside
super good.
Or whatever.
But I was bringing that up because it had such a similar feeling because those guys, they'll just play like 10 and 15 minute songs
mm-hmm.
and just sit there and solo the whole fucking time. And it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. What else did I have written?
Yeah,
down?
I mean,
let
if me... you have stuff on everything, tell me what else you thought. I'm interested. I'm glad you enjoyed this. Like I said, I didn't think you were going to hate it necessarily, but I wasn't sure how, you know what I mean? I wasn't sure how you would appreciate it.
To go back to Bodhisattva.
Okay, yeah.
I thought that the concept of that song was very interesting. The Bodhisattva, will you take my hand or whatever
mm-hmm.
the lyric is.
Won't you take me by the hand?
Yeah. So I looked that up because I was like, that's such a weird fucking song for like the 70s album.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to be like someone who has attained nirvana
yeah.
by helping other people to attain nirvana themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was very surprising because I don't really think that like Eastern religions or philosophies were very popular in the 70s.
Well, I think amongst the hippie movement, and I think that's what that song is kind of a satire of those people trying to give away all their possessions
oh,
and become enlightened.
Oh, interesting.
Because the line, I'll be there shining your Japan, sparkling your China.
Oh, I see.
Kind
I
of
didn't
a pun,
catch
but
that.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of a satire. Most of their lyrics are either satirical or
mm-hmm. critical.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think the Eastern religions, we'll think about like George Harrison and the Beatles went to India
yeah, that's
in the
true.
Late 60s and they have some songs that are straight up Indian inspired and the like the Who and
okay.
the Rolling Stones all used sitar and there was Eastern influence in the 60s and 70s in the hippie movement and stuff.
That definitely
and
makes
this
sense.
Album was,
I hadn't thought about that.
This album was only 73, so
right.
it wasn't that long after that, like, the hippie.
Well,
know.
Because my reference point is always, my dad is from India, for anyone
right.
who doesn't know. And he always said that, like, in the 80s when he came over, it was kind of weird for him because there were just a lot of people who didn't know shit about India. And obviously it was mainstream culture versus hippie culture.
Right.
Especially for the 80s at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that when he was enrolling at University of Dayton, and when they were giving his class schedule to him, they put him in remedial English, even though that was his primary language. Mm-hmm. And he spoke that at home. Not even because he had an accent. He actually had a British accent.
Okay.
Because he was one of them bougie Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And they still, like, he was like, oh, no, I don't need remedial English. Like, I can speak perfectly fine. English. It's my primary language. And he told me that the guy just, like, looked up at him and was like, we're going to keep that on there, though. So that's my reference point. And I was assuming that, especially because it's not a surface level reference to Buddhism.
Yeah, it's calling a deeper
bodhisattva, which is so specific.
You're right.
So that I found that very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else I had. Razor Boy, it was kind of bossa nova.
Yeah, for sure.
That was interesting after Bodhisattva because it was such a hard shift.
Uh-huh.
And they did that a few times in the album. They were definitely pulling from a lot of different styles. But I think that was just interesting placement because a lot of the other songs transitioned more and they tried to lead into each other more. And I feel like in that particular spot, I almost separate in my head Bodhisattva from the rest of the album, because it does feel very distinct from the rest of it, where it has like the Beatles-y kind of feel to the beginning of it, and 12 bar kind of that dun 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 dun.
Yeah. I get it.
And you really don't see that again on the album, I don't think.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They all are kind of just about 5-ish minute jazz rock kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They stuck to a little bit of formatting there. A lot of the later stuff has longer, you know, more improvisational sections for this one, other than Your Gold Teeth, which is like 7 minutes or something, I think.
Right.
Most of them are like, it's interesting. Like you said, they wrote it with the intention of performing live. Most of the songs are like more, shorter and cut down radio friendly, but it didn't have a single. It was a critical success, like I said, but not really a commercial success.
Well, none of those songs stick out to me as a potential single.
Bodhisattva, if there's a single on that song or on that album, it's probably Bodhisattva.
But I think that's again why I single it out as being so.
That's why I was going to say that
exactly. But the rest of it really,
Mild School is relatively. I mean,
I can see that.
Those two. Or the, like, that one's well known on, that's like on their hits compilations and stuff. Mild School.
Okay. Cause
it's short and it's catchy. And I mean, they're all really catchy, but you know what I mean? That one, you'll hear that on oldies radio.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
Those two. So
that makes sense. Let's see. I think that we have covered all of the things that I wanted to go over. Oh,
okay.
Except for.
Yeah.
King of the World.
Oh, yeah, King of the World. That's interesting. That's like a post-apocalypse.
Yeah.
From what I...
Mm-hmm. I loved the keyboard melody. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah, I know the main line.
And there was like a tempo change right in the middle of the song to this totally different feeling right after one of those keyboard melodies.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still led by the keyboard. It just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, there was no transition into it or anything. They just did a hard tempo shift. And then they went back to, like, the original groove and the original feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I really dug that.
Yeah.
It was very, like, proggy.
They're good at those shifts like that. They do that in Your Gold Teeth, too, when they... at the end of like the guitar and keyboard solos, they fall right back into that tobacco they grow. They fall right back into that little bridge section.
And I find that so interesting because so many people want it to like lead smoothly and they enjoy the music because of those transitions and the way that things are connected. Whereas for me, for whatever reason, I love it to be just like cut almost.
Yeah.
And to find other ways where those two songs or those two parts fit into each other.
See, that's why I think it's interesting you say you don't like Kanye West. That tells me you haven't listened to enough Kanye West because he loves, like, I think what I like about him most is his production and his sampling.
Okay.
And things like that.
Then yes, you'll have to recommend a Kanye album for me. I do appreciate that he sampled King Crimson.
Oh yeah.
I think that's dope.
He has great, like, not only is his source material great, but what he does with it. That's honestly not one of his best utilizations. The sample of King Crimson. It's okay, but it's kind of just straightforward.
I don't know if I've heard the whole song. I've just heard that specific song.
It's a power. No one man should have all that power. That's the Kanye song that uses.
I don't know that off the top.
Okay, that's the song that uses.
Okay.
21st Century Schizoid Man. But anyway. So, yeah, let's check our time here. How long? All right. We had a little bit of a technical.
I was trying to check the time, and I stopped it because I'm so smart.
That's
okay. I'll fix it. But yeah, do you have anything else on the album?
No, I mean, I think we covered it pretty thoroughly. That was a good one.
You
mentioned you wanting to kind of figure out what we were going to do next time
at the end of
the episode. So yeah, people will, if they listen to this one before we have episode 3 out, they can they can know what's coming.
Give
so
a listen
it's
beforehand.
And it I'm is still, your turn, yeah.
I'm still going to edit in the parts we're talking about because I think that did help for sure to follow along.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you want to listen to the album beforehand, that way you can get a feel for it, maybe dive into some of the deeper items on the track that you wouldn't normally hear.
So yeah, it's your turn.
So yes, next time.
Do you have one in mind yet, or did you want to talk about it?
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
wasn't that one of the things in the MG Kelly song?
Let's
talk about it.
All right.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
So... Let's do like a 20 questions kind of thing with it.
Okay.
Not that long.
Yeah.
Older or newer?
I'm going to go older because that Vector album was like 2016.
Okay.
So older.
Something that you're not familiar with or something that you will probably like because of like familiarity and other things you like?
I don't know. Let's go weird with it, I guess.
Let's go weird?
Weirder. You know what I mean? Less familiar.
All right. And how much do you care about strong production?
Oh, like strong production as in like clean production.
Production. Are you good with like a dirty production?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go with Bathory's self-titled album.
Bathory. Yeah, I've never heard of them.
They are the first black metal band as we understand black metal today.
Okay.
And black metal's my favorite subgenre. It's one that I've been hesitant to introduce to you. I think you may be ready now that you're starting to get more of a feel for the harsh vocals.
Okay.
Because this is a harsh album. The tempos and the feeling is all very thrashy, but the vocals are intentionally pretty fucked up.
Okay.
And the production is kind of like what we were talking about earlier, lo-fi and, very like garage bandy.
This will be a fun one for you at home then too, it sounds like.
I hadn't thought of that, but yes,
like the
a lot of them, if they're not metal people, they will probably hate it.
You not get into this one. All right, well, that's interesting, and I'm gonna start thinking about which one I'm gonna give to you for the week after so that we can talk about it at the end of the next show. But yeah, I don't think we have anything else for now. Hope you guys liked this second episode if you've hung on for 2+ hours now through our
and thank you very much if you have. We greatly appreciate you.
Yeah,
we love you wrong time.
Yeah, we're gonna try to keep doing this, keep getting out there, so
keep pumping it out.
All right, Invisible Airwaves, at Invisible Airwaves Cast on Instagram.
Or Gmail also, invisibleairwavescast@gmail.com if you want to like talk
email.
About something we mentioned.
Email in.
We can do like a mailbag thing if people email us.
Yeah, right now we're just on SoundCloud. I think we're trying to get on streaming.
Working on it.
Okay.
I put it on a website that's supposed to like send it everywhere.
We'll see.
So hopefully, we're waiting to hear back.
Maybe someday you'll hear this one on Spotify and you'll think this doesn't make sense.
Right.
All right.
If not, go on our Instagram page and you'll find the link to the SoundCloud.
All right. That'll do it. We'll see you next time.
Have a good one.